Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Viewing Angles podcast, the only movie podcast now on Spotify. I'm your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me, as always, is my faithful steed.
The B-host, Robert B. Mecki.
Is your middle name really start with a B?
No, my middle name is actually Jerry Seinfeld.
That's like the dumbest joke you've ever made, and it really got me.
Gotta hit him with the surprises every now and then.
Yeah, imagine. What's your full name, sir? It's Robert Jerry Seinfeld, Mecki.
My surname is actually Robert Jerry Seinfeld B movie, but I changed it when I got married.
Thank God. When you got married to Jerry Seinfeld?
Exactly. Who's the bald guy from Seinfeld?
George Costanza, or like Jason Alexander?
Jason Alexander, that's his actual name.
Yeah.
For the longest time, when I was a kid, and my parents were always showing me The Princess Bride, because they love that movie, I thought Jason Alexander played the poison guy, the other bald guy in...
Oh, yeah, what is his name? Shoot.
I have no fucking idea.
He's got Sean Wallace, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Wallace Shawn?
He's famous for other things, too. I can only remember him from The Princess Bride.
Yeah, he was one half of My Dinner with Andre.
Before they remade it into Dinner for Schmucks?
Wait, what? Is it? That's not real, right? That's not like a...
I'm pretty sure I just bullshitted that.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure.
I'm a prophet now, so maybe that's true.
Yeah, really. I had a long discussion about how the next Avengers is going to be called Avengers Annihilation. It's going to have Annihilus in it.
Dude, oh my God. I can't fucking wait. I'm so excited.
Oh, I know you are. Yeah, I think it has the potential to really be awful, I feel like, it won't introduce an entirely new, like, it's going to get introduced in Captain Marvel, and then, is there any other Marvel movie before?
No, it's Captain Marvel and then Avengers 4, and then right after Avengers 4 is Spider-Man 2, which is hilarious, because it's like, well, obviously they're all coming back, as if nobody, like, we all knew that to begin with, but the fact that, like, are they gonna, here's what's interesting to me, is Spider-Man 2 comes out so soon after Avengers Infinity War, are they gonna start marketing Spider-Man 2 before we know the story of Avengers Infinity War Part 2?
Yeah, probably.
You think they're gonna put trailers out and reveal that, like, Spider-Man has come back from being dusted at the end of Infinity War before, like, we actually find out what happens to the Avengers in Infinity War 2?
Robert, there's already a whole movie about it. Like, it's not like a abstract. It's like the movie's already been filmed, and so they'll, like, that's already been revealed that he's not dead.
I know. Okay, but so this is only the only people that I think know he's coming back are the film nerds like us that actually follow news sites for movies on Twitter. But, like, again, the majority of the Marvel audience, I feel like, probably doesn't know what's happening. Like,
I think Hollywood is so out of touch with regular people that I don't think they give a shit. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I'm just saying, my parents, when we saw Infinity War, they legit thought that all of those Avengers are dead forever. And I feel like my parents represent a pretty big demographic of what the Marvel audience is.
Yeah, I mean, mayhaps. I would doubt. I think the fact that how soon after, like, what's the time difference on that?
So Avengers Part 2 comes out in May, and then Spider-Man Far From Home comes out in July. So they have, like, maybe a month and a half to market.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be, cause that's, I mean, that, I yeah, mean, that's like, they, that's they like a solo, solo level.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Right. Yeah. And we all saw, and I feel like, you know, I don't know. I think you think they might push back Spider-Man 2?
No, I don't think so. So I think I don't remember what's coming out in the third quarter of or the third trimester of 2019.
Okay, yeah, no, sure, talk about it like that.
Exactly. But I know that they have a third film coming out, because that's just Marvel's MO at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm really interested if there's going to be a fatigue, like if after Avengers 4, people are going to be like, all right, I don't need to see these movies anymore. Like,
no way.
You
Avengers
think so?
4 is going to end on a massive cliffhanger because they know they have to get people coming back for more.
No, I think it's going to close out. I think it's going to be one of those. No, I don't think that's I think it's going to end in a wrap up, but it's going to set the stage for like a new. Just like, here are the new Avengers. That's what it's going to be. And yeah, that's what the next phase is going to start. And then it's going to be, you know, Spider-Man, the Black Panther movie, Guardians 3 or whatever. And then the next one is going to be called the New Avengers.
Man, that's going to be interesting if they actually call it the New Avengers.
Well, what else would they call it? Do you think they'd call it the Avengers?
I think they just called Avengers different subtitle.
I think they'll call it the New Avengers because they're... Disney's all about like the announcement of like this is a new thing. So,
yeah, we'll see.
I have a feeling that and people so like letting everybody know like, oh, the new Avengers, like I should see this. This is like that other good thing that I once saw. You know what I mean?
The new Avengers. Can you imagine if they called Star Wars Episode 7 the new Star Wars?
No, but I can imagine that there's because there's already comics called the New Avengers, right?
Yeah, yeah, they have New Avengers comics, but like nobody likes them.
It's like it's called like the New Avengers, though, right?
Yeah, but nobody likes them,
right?
Because it's such a blatant attempt to try to reform the team,
right? Which is what they're gonna do. Like, you know what I mean?
They're gonna call it West Coast Avengers.
West Coast Avengers.
West Coast Avengers.
But how Spider-Man. Lives in Queens.
Yeah, he's gonna move to the West Coast
to be with Venom.
He's gonna be far from home, dude.
No, man, I don't think because Marvel hates the fact that Sony's trying to do.
Yeah, that okay. So this is the funniest thing is that all of Marvel's social media channels, not a single one was doing any marketing work for Venom. And it's
definitely
hilarious.
Not, yeah.
Like, they're trying so hard to distance themselves from that movie. But here's the thing. That movie is doing fucking gangbusters. Like, I think on the last episode, we said this movie's going to have a massive drop off. No.
It didn't. It came in first like, in the box office again.
Oh, man,
oh my
dude.
God.
I guess people just want queer superhero icons. Like, I'm glad that that's the direction we're going in 2018. But, man, it had to be Venom.
Venom, you know, I don't even want to talk about Venom anymore. I'm over it. There's going to be carnage, man.
The world isn't over it yet, though.
It is for me. All right. So we're going to just keep on flying through. I got nothing. This is just some casual riffage. So today is going to be a special, a double review episode. We're cutting through all the BS of the box office and trailers that you didn't see and I didn't see. And no real news. Like, this is kind of, it works out perfectly. Not too much news going on. So we're not really missing anything. We're just getting into what movies you should see. And because it's getting to be like Halloween season, and I think people get like, oh, I don't want to see a scary movie. I just want to see a regular movie. And that's where we come in.
Exactly.
We saw two movies. Neither of them were scary. Well, you know, they're a little scary, but not in the way that you would traditionally think of.
Yeah, space is just inherently scary.
Yeah, definitely. Space and motels, you know?
Good point.
Yeah. So, Rob, do you want to start in the... let's start with Bad Times, you think?
Yeah, let's start with Bad Times.
So the first movie that we saw, I believe we both saw it. That was the first movie we saw this weekend was Bad Times at the El Royale, starring John Hamm, Jeff Bridges, Chris Hemsworth, Dakota Johnson, and even more unknown people.
So many people.
Yeah, it's a really great ensemble cast. Written and directed by Drew Goddard. The director and co-writer of Cabin in the Woods, the writer of The Martian. He's done other stuff. Big Buffy writer and director.
He's a very good writer. He's a very talented director. And I'm just going to put it out there. Everyone should go see this movie. This movie's fucking great. But unfortunately, it's bombing at the box office right now.
Oh, is it really? No.
Yeah, it opened at number 7 in the box office.
Woo! And which I'm like... Maybe I think the marketing of it has not been good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I
like
think
I've
also
only seen it in movie theaters. I haven't seen any other kind of anything else around it.
Yeah. Well, I think the trailers are very good. It just doesn't have enough presence. But I right. definitely think that their strategy kind of backfired, because I'm pretty sure they were thinking the same thing we were thinking, that Venom was going to just do, it was going to bomb. Like, it was going to have maybe a big opening weekend and then fall off when everybody realized it was mm-hmm. shit. But it turns out people really want to see Venom. So Venom took number one at the box office again. Yeah. And bad times fell at number seven. It's also just, you know, it's an R-rated mystery movie that doesn't it's not attached to a franchise or anything that we really know about. The biggest
2.5 hour long R-rated, you know.
Yeah. Like the biggest marketing icon that this movie has is Chris Hemsworth. And he's really Definitely. Not that like he's Thor. But the thing about Marvel stars is they don't sell tickets outside of Marvel movies.
Yeah, that is like surprising, you know.
Yeah. It's like Game of Thrones. Like, everybody knows right. the Game of Thrones actors, but nobody goes to see their fucking movies. Like, look at Terminator Genesis. Ugh.
Right. I mean, I think it's, well, I mean, look at, like, Me Before You or whatever bullshit oh, that was. Yeah. You know, I
oh,
think
God.
They're not, like, necessarily bankable, but they, like, I also think that they get garbage. Like, they're not very good. They're not that great, you know? I think the Game of Thrones actors are doing great in their own roles, but I really do not think that...
I don't think Emilia Clarke is a good actress at all.
I think she's decent, you know?
I think she's decent enough for Game of Thrones, but I think that if the show, like, if everything surrounding her wasn't as good as it is, people would be mocking her performance.
It's definitely an ensemble cast.
Yeah.
And I think she's also, like, kind of weirdly written, like, because they've tried to, like, wrap up... They've really tried to expedite some things in the show that, like, that the book is having a hard time with. And the
book
is... They
can't fucking wait for George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, oh my God. I have a theory that he's going to release the last two books before this new season's coming out.
He's
going
to shadow drop him before the new season comes out?
Yeah, because there's, like, all this, like, weird stuff. Like, he's said before that he's really close, like, a few months from finishing it. Mm-hmm. Like, years ago, and the fact that he keeps like pushing it back, that it's not been like, oh, I still got a lot of ways to go, and we're all like, all right, like, how long is that? And he's like, oh, just wait. It's been like, hey, I'm on the cusp of finishing this is what's going to happen, and then it gets like pushed in the, you know, it'd be different if, you know, imagine if someone was like, hey, I'm like a month away from finishing this. And then 2 years later, they're still not done. You're like, are you still working on it? Like, yeah, no, I'm working on it. You'd think something was up.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's actually a pretty good strategy, because I think I could see him releasing maybe not even before the finale, but like at the same time as Game of Thrones is ending, he's going to release, you know, the book version of the Game of Thrones conclusion. Compared to mm-hmm. the TV version of the Game of Thrones conclusion. And I think it's going to create a shit ton of infighting within the Game of Thrones community. And people are going to be talking about it forever. Just like exactly. people are still talking about The Last Jedi because so many people fucking hated it.
Yeah, all those Russians.
All those Russians.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be something like... Because I think that he probably signed a deal with the producers of HBO. And they're like, you got to us like... do more. And he's like, all right, I'll let you do more on this condition. And they're like, all right, but you have to hit like this is the deadline. Because, you know, they could have definitely filmed and like finished everything in a year of like they could have the fact that we have to wait like this long, like they definitely have the resources.
They're just building this, hype.
Yeah, no, it is definitely building hype. Like they said originally it was going to be a year and then a year and a half. And it's, you know, it's going to be it's 2 full years.
Yeah, I
There's
can't
no
believe
way.
That
yeah.
Game of Thrones season seven concluded last year. Like, it's been a year since we saw that ending. It's fucking weird.
No, it's been like it's been 2 years, man.
Has it? No, because wasn't it 2017?
No, man. Last summer there was no Game of Thrones.
I don't know if you're right about that. I could have sworn that it ended with the dragons melting the wall. Sorry, Game of Thrones spoilers for anybody listening. But it could have ended with the wall coming down in 2017, like October, November 2017. And then we have to wait like a year and a half, which is, you know, it's been a year now. And then I think Game of Thrones season 8 isn't coming out until
you're right.
2019, like summer 2019, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no. You know what it was? So we had to wait like a year and a half for season 7, too.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So now and then now we're waiting even longer.
I actually got real lucky because I didn't get into Game of Thrones until right before season 7 came out. So I just binged it all as we were waiting for season 7. Because I learned my lesson from Breaking Bad. Like, I binge watched 3 seasons of Breaking Bad and then had to wait for season 4. And it was the worst experience. So I decided, like, well, if it's a good show, I'm just going to binge it right before the new season comes out.
Yeah. No, I binge watched the first season and I was up to date ever since. I read the entire series between seasons like 3 and 4. And so I've been just waiting my entire life.
But so now the TV show is ahead of you.
Yeah, and it's, well, I mean, it's completely, like, before then it was completely different. Let's get back to bad times at the El Royale.
Let's do that.
Complete segue. So I'll go in, like, what I really liked about this. This movie is very well-paced. It's really has it all unfold, and it's very Tarantino-esque, and I don't mean that to like say like, oh, this is like a direct, you know, like someone trying to ape Tarantino style, but it is, the characters are all very well built out. It's not a linear storyline. Things jump around a lot and it just, everything like works about it really well and it connects really well. And it's very satisfying to watch and pay attention. You definitely feel like you're being like validated when it's happening.
Yeah, man. In an effort to relate this to the like fucking 10-minute digression we just had, this feels very Game of Thrones-esque in the sense that you don't know who is an expendable character until the very end of the movie. And even up until that point, you're still wondering, like, are any of these characters going to see the conclusion of the film?
Yeah, and there are some very tense scenes in it. I think that is what stands out the most for me is that when I'm watching, like, there are a few scenes when I'm like so tense and I can feel my muscles like contract. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so into this. It's so much fun to watch. And it looks like all of the actors are having a good time. And there's also like a level of mystery where you're not really privy to all of the plot points that are going on. There's a lot left for you to fill in, but everything is so well laid out that it's, you kind of like it. I liked not having all the answers.
Yeah, no. I love this movie. And I think you're hitting the nail right on the head. And I think that a lot of it comes from, it's the fact that I went in this movie a little apprehensive because I was super into the trailers and I loved the idea of having like this like murder mystery with 12 different characters, each super unique and with different motivations that we're all going to like congeal at this motel. But I was worried that the writing wasn't going to hold up to that premise, that it wasn't going to be able to pull it off. But it totally does.
Oh, definitely. It's very well put together. And the acting is so on point and you can tell everyone's having a great time with the material. It really hits a lot of, you know, I'm not going to reveal anything, but there are several scenes involving singing in a hotel room, in a motel room, that are, some of them are beautiful, some of them are tense. They're always just like Magneta. You can tell, and this is the first time, I'm not really sure if she's ever been in, Cynthia Erivo she's like a Broadway singer, and she's so good.
She was my favorite character in the film, and I was so not expecting that to be the case.
Yeah. Oh, man. She has got some pipes on her. She is an amazing singer, an amazing actress, and she goes toe-to-toe with, you know, Jeff Bridges, who is an Oscar award-winning actor and cult icon. It's, you know, the fact that this is like one of her first big movie roles. It is, I'm so happy. I want to see what she comes up with next.
Yeah.
And everyone, you know, I think also Dakota Johnson, who hasn't got a lot of time to show her acting chops, she really kind of shows up for this movie and does a lot with a little, you know.
Yeah.
She is very good at driving things along and giving things kind of a soft like edge of this person who cares but also is not afraid to really fuck shit up. And she plays it very well.
Yeah. I think that we're going to see a lot more of her after Suspiria. I think mm-hmm. that's really going to be the performance to put her on the map.
Yeah, definitely.
But man, yeah, I love the relationship that forms between Jeff Bridges and the Broadway singer.
Darlene. Mm-hmm.
Darlene. Yeah. I can't wait till I can actually remember her name.
Cynthia Erivo is the actress's name, and Darlene Sweet is the character's name.
Lots of the jungle. This movie's just beautiful. Like, it is so stylish.
So stylish. So the camera work is just
top notch.
Holding your hand, showing you the way. Nothing super flashy, but getting everything done so well. Yeah. And I'll tell you, there's even the maitre d', the bellhop, is a character showing that when I was first starting out watching the movie, I'm like, ah, who is this guy? Oh, this is weird. Talk about an arc of a character. Oh my God. I can't really say too much more about this movie, because part of it is, the best part about the movie is that it's so rare that I'm watching something and I have no idea what's going to happen next. And this movie made me feel like that the entire time.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
I felt the same way. Like, it's so rare for a movie to come out where the trailers haven't spoiled at least like 2/3 of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie is it. So I recommend don't look up anything about the plot of this movie.
Nope.
You know, watch the trailer if you want to get a sense of what the tone of the movie is. But man, just go see this movie. This movie deserves your money. It's so good.
Yeah.
And not enough people are talking about it.
Yeah. So great. Would definitely recommend it. I want to say, Chris Hemsworth, his California accent is amazing.
As amazing as his body.
Billy Dee it's a great character for him, and he nails it.
Yeah. I don't even want to spoil like what kind of archetype he's playing in this movie, because it's just fun to watch and discover on your own.
Oh yeah. And I heard he really brought a lot of that with him. Like, that's all of that is Chris Hemsworth. Like, I was reading things about Drew Goddard talking about the movie. It seems like it was all Hemsworth just came in and gave that character a lot of humanity. And, you know, oh man, I love his, he is such a funny character.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing. It's like, even though he's playing like what's supposed to be, like if you could define a villain in this story, it's probably Chris Hemsworth. But there's a lot more depth to him than I think anybody was expecting.
Oh, yeah. And depth that is unspoken, too, that is completely shown.
Yeah. Just through body language.
Yeah. And there is like mystery.
Like,
yeah.
Man. Oh, I think I might see this movie again. Just talking about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would definitely see this movie again. So it's so great. So, I mean, my final thoughts are on this movie, that it is worth your time. It's worth telling other people to come see it with you because of how enjoyable it is. If you're into noir movies, if you're into thriller movies, if you're into human portraits, it really nails a lot. It's firing on a lot of different cylinders all at once.
Yeah.
And it is doing all of those extremely well. Maybe the only criticism that I have of the movie is that sometimes it's a little disjointed, but I think that the way everything turns out, it makes all of that worth it. It kind of is taking these disparate parts and bringing it all together. And so when you're watching it at first, you're kind of like, all right, what's going on here? You know, it's hard to figure out exactly what you should be looking out for, but just trust the movie has it all together.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this works as both a flick and a film. As a flick, it's a fun murder mystery. You're going to be intrigued the entire time trying to figure out these character motivations and what they're actually here for. As a film, it's stylish. It's very well filmed. I think all of the performances that all of the actors give are great.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is interesting enough on its own, but I'm very glad that Drew Goddard was the one to make this film, because I think he's only done Cabin in the Woods before this, his only other feature film.
Right.
But I think that even with that, he proved that he was fantastic at juggling all of these narratives and all these characters that are, you know, complex and distinct, but still having them cohesively meld by the time the film wraps up.
Ditto. Completely agree.
Yeah, so go see this movie.
Yeah, go see this movie. I guess I got nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah, pay full price. See it in a theater. It's a good theater experience.
Yeah. Get into the mystery with the entire audience. Right, gasp with everybody.
Yeah, exactly. But don't like hoop and holler anytime a gunshot goes off. Holy shit. People who go to movies are the worst people.
Don't tell me that actually happened.
That actually happened. There's a gunshot.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, woo. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Shit. And I'm like, oh, my God.
How did that happen to you in Chicago? I'm in Texas and that didn't happen to me.
I have no idea. I think it might just be like the part of town that I'm in, the theaters that I'm going to.
I guess.
Because you're probably going to the Alamo Draft House all the time, right?
I did. Yeah, that's where I went.
Because they'll kick you out for that shit.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're the only one doing that, like, my guy would have gotten kicked out of the theater. Definitely. At Alamo Draft House.
Are there any draft houses in Chicago?
No, I think they're thinking about opening one up, but so far, no.
You should campaign for it.
Yeah, I'll call Rom. Yeah. Mr. Mayor, see? You like movies? See?
Yeah.
I don't know why I had to get old-timey. Yeah, you like when people shut up and you like to drink while you do it? Let me tell you, sir.
All mayors are from the 1920s. Everybody knows this.
Yeah, I know it. You know it. We're all just talking about it. All right. Should we move into some more Oscar?
Some Oscar baby shit. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So the next movie that we saw was First Man, the story of Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, starring Ryan Gosling, Claire Foy, Kyle Chandler, Damien Chazelle's wife, Jason Clark. Yeah, it plays Ed White's wife. That's Damien Chazelle's like girlfriend.
Oh, I thought you said Claire Foy was Damien Chazelle's wife.
Nah, she married, man.
So was Damien Chazelle's wife.
Are they married? I think they might be just his girlfriend.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of funny. She's pretty good, though. And it's directed by Damien Chazelle, the director and writer of such movies as Whiplash and La La Land.
I think those are the only two films he's directed, right?
Correct. Yeah, he's written some other ones.
Yeah, he wrote Grand Piano, which is on Netflix, starring Elijah Wood, and it's super underrated. You should check it out if you want a good time.
Oh, there's, yeah. I mean,
that's
even
my Netflix and chill moment for the for the night.
Yeah. The concept of that movie is there's somebody, he's coming back and he's a famous piano player, and he's coming for like a resurgence. Right.
Yeah.
And somebody calls him and says, if you get one note wrong tonight, I am going to shoot you in the fucking head.
Yeah.
And cut to laughs.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Elijah Wood's facial expressions sell it.
Yeah. Oh, and he is married to her, Olivia Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
Whoever that is.
Who's Claire Foy married to?
I don't know. Somebody. Somebody probably not. No, I don't know.
She's like kind of a very transformative actress to me, because she looks completely different in every film or just piece of media that she's in. Like, I knew her name from The Crown on Netflix, which is a very good show. But she looks completely different in this movie in First Man. And then also, and she's playing the girl with the dragon tattoo in, what is it, The Girl in the Spider's Web that's coming out later this year?
Yeah, no, she's great. I think I like watching her work.
She disappears into her roles. It's awesome.
Yeah, and when she's playing on the basis of sex, she's going to be Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
No, that's Felicity Jones.
Yep.
She is another British actress who is also very good looking, so I can understand your confusion.
Know, white people all look the same to me.
Exactly. You're allowed to say that because you're white.
Those are the rules. I don't make them, I just reiterate them. Yeah, okay. Let's keep this gravy train rolling. Did you see this in IMAX? Because I saw it in IMAX,
yeah.
So first, I guess we can kind of integrate it in, but would you recommend seeing it in IMAX?
If
someone were to see it?
Okay. I think that if you are a big space nerd or a big film nerd, it's worth seeing in IMAX. But to like the average moviegoer, I don't think it's worth the extra like $10 it costs to see in IMAX.
Yeah.
And the reason is because so it uses IMAX in, I think, a really powerful way. And I think that spoiler alert for the fucking moon landing, I guess. It only switches to a proper IMAX aspect ratio when they're on the moon, which is super cool and it looks awesome and it's thematically appropriate. But for the rest of the movie, like the majority of the movie does not take place on the moon. So it doesn't feel as impactful to be watching it in IMAX, to be paying that extra $10 to see it. But IMAX when that is shift also happens, about
The sound, you know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, the sound design is amazing throughout the entire film. So
yeah, and so I think that is part of what I would say. I think I would recommend seeing it to get the full effect in IMAX. And it's not just about the picture, because most of it's filmed in 16mm.
Yeah.
So you get it like a very grainy quality with a lot of it. A very like home movie-esque, which it works really well, I think.
Yeah.
Let's just get right into the movie. I think I was surprised by this movie, how much I liked it, because
expecting to like it?
I was, you know, when they're first like, oh, it's a movie about Neil Armstrong going to the moon. I'm like, well, he fucking makes it. Like, like he gets what's the suspense, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I know how this goes. What could they possibly tell me? What I didn't realize is that Damien Chazelle is a master of an empathetic camera. Like, he puts us into the shoes of these astronauts so well, from the first scene of being in the cockpit of an X-15 rocket plane. Like, it's, you're feeling the effect of these people being literally in a tin can getting shot into like through a rocket. And
yeah,
the fact that they can establish, you know, I'm like, oh, this guy makes it to the moon. Like, I know what happens. The fact that they can make it tense, the scenes where he's in a plane, where he's in a space shuttle, like, it is a testament to Chazelle's talent. This is like this is where it all happens. Now we know it's not a fluke. We know that this guy is going to be making amazing movies for a long time to come.
Yeah.
And we know he can handle huge set pieces so much that it is done right. This guy is, am almost at a loss for words of how surprised I am. And that might be why I think it's so good, because of how much my expectations were low, that it really, you know, kicked. Even when I heard people saying it was good, I'm like, whatever, people are stupid. And then I saw it,
you, I was fucking like, Academy, oh, no. Voters.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, you hacks. And I'm like, it's good.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the camera work in this film really turns it up a notch. And again, I think, like you said, the empathetic camera and the fact that he really does put so much effort into having the camera just drift across the construction of these ships. And by the time you're done watching this movie, you feel like we shouldn't have gotten to the moon. Like, none of this have worked, but it did. And it's amazing. Now, like, the bravery and the fucking psychosis of these astronauts that were willing to throw themselves into explosive tin cans to launch themselves out of Earth's atmosphere to get to the moon is
oof. And the focus on the, like, as the engines are like gearing up, the focus on like the nuts and bolts of the ship and how
rattling,
everything is shaking.
Yeah.
You're like, ooh, this, it really puts you into the mindset of, we think about going to the moon as, oh yeah, they shot them up and they just hung on and whatever. No, this is not like a space age. This is not Star Trek Enterprise. This is a rocket on a tin can getting shot through space. And it was very obvious, like, to everybody pretty much, that this could not work. And they have a moment. I love the historical accuracy of this. I'm a pretty big space nerd, and especially that early space program, the, you know, the way the Air Force worked and all that.
I like that we had a Chuck Yeager cameo too.
Yeah, no, I love that. Dude, I was like, hey, that's, and I went like badged my roommate, like, hey, it's Chuck Yeager. And he's like, who is that? I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah,
doesn't really matter, but I like that.
Yeah. Oh man, that's like, I feel like it's interesting too, because I feel like if you're not a giant space nerd like us, it's when you know the history of the Apollo program, the Gemini program, I feel like this movie takes on a much darker tone.
Oh, definitely. Especially one sequence in particular.
Yeah, like there are sequences of like you hear people saying like, oh, I got into this program. Like I was selected for this program. And they're happy initially. But, you know, as someone living in the 2010s, you know exactly how that program went down.
Right. And I think for somebody who might not have known, I felt like I was almost giving away like something to some people, because I'm like, as soon as they have this whole sequence and I'm like fidgeting and I'm just like, so, oh yeah, man.
But
and
that everyone's sequence was probably so, like, oh, dude, what so are you impactful. Doing?
Oh my God. It was.
That was so effective.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I mean, I knew exactly what was going to happen, but I was still just like shaking in my seat. I was like, oh fuck.
Yeah, exactly. And it's done so well.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, the other big sequence we can talk about is Neil Armstrong going into space for the first time on the is part of the Gemini project.
Yeah.
In the docking exercise. And what a, you know, I hate to use this word, but visceral sequence. Oh, I would. It's one of the more intense movie going experiences I've had this year, I would say, that sequence.
Yeah, I would put it up there with the Interstellar docking scene.
Yeah, ooh, it's so good.
It doesn't have Hans Zimmer's score. Here's the thing, if I have any faults with the film, and it's actually kind of ironic. Yeah, I feel like the score wasn't. It didn't really stick with me, and I feel like it's just because I have this preconceived notion in my head that any movie about space is going to have a score that sticks with me. Mm-hmm. But this one just nothing about it really stood out. I think it did its job fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm just nitpicking at this point because there's not that much to criticize about this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, yeah, the score was nothing. I got some vibes of where I felt like I could hear like City of Stars in the music. They're like, da, 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 da. I'm like, is everyone else hearing this shit? Like,
you're waiting for Ryan Gosling to start dancing, start tap dancing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, moving on to the performances in it. Oh, man. Ryan Gosling will not get any credit for playing this. He chose to play Armstrong in a way that will get him no recognition, but is brilliant.
I'm actually very afraid that this entire movie is going to go under a lot of people's radars. Like, I know, like, we've been calling it Oscar bait for a while, but I hope that's true. I hope it gets, like, awards nomination, because it's not doing that well at the box office. I don't hear that many people talking about it. Again, it's all Venom's fault. God damn it. But,
yeah, no, it's the flag planning, man.
Oh, yeah, it's the... The flag planning, Jesus
Christ. Yeah, I want to address that right off the bat is some certain people saying that it's an unpatriotic movie because they don't show them planting the flag. And let me tell you, to show the bravery and the American ingenuity required to do this mission, if you're looking at this entire movie and you can't see the way that this movie portrays the lives of people who died in service of your country, you're a hack. The insincerity and cynicism of what you are trying to do by making a political point is disgusting, because I mean, this movie really, you know, it gives a voice in life to people who there's no reason that you would want to go to the moon. Like, there's no reason that you would want to do these incredibly dangerous things where you could die at any fucking second. Yeah. There's no reason you would want to do that besides a sense of duty and a sense of patriotism and a sense of like higher like purpose. And, you know, it's disturbing that you could get lost in the fact that they didn't, because they show the flag on the moon. They don't show them planting it. But if that's where you're getting lost in, and that's the thing that you think is, you need to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror, I think.
Yeah. You need to kill yourself.
as quickly and efficiently as possible.
But no, I agree. I feel like this movie is an encapsulation of the last time period in history that the world as a whole looked to America as a guiding beacon, as someone who was on the forefront of technology, the forefront of exploration. That hasn't happened, I think, since. So if you're one of those people that's like, oh, this movie's unpatriotic, one, go fuck yourself, yeah. Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Just go fuck yourself. But yeah, if you think this movie's unpatriotic, then you didn't watch this movie. You have no idea what the space program was actually about. And you have no concept of what actual sacrifice is. So
you're
fuck
hack.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a hack. You're a carpetbagger. Fuck you.
Yeah. You know, and I don't like, I mean, it's kind of almost, you want to describe it like everything, but the production design is so well. The performances are so good. The effects are so good. I hope Chazelle wins best director for this. Like, so far, this is the only thing I think that could even like approach best director, of how well it's all put together and how well the performances all work together. All the choices make sense. And, you know, the only thing I could maybe say is that it starts off a little slow. But other than that, this is a movie that is very easy to enjoy and is so thoughtful and well orchestrated. That's all I got.
Yeah. The one thing I'm kind of questioning about this movie, though, is I want to know what Buzz Aldrin thinks about this film. Because
they make him look like a fucking asshole.
Yeah, they make him look like a total dick. And he is like one of the last first men on the, well, the last men on the moon that's still alive. And I kind of want to know, like, if he's seen this movie and what he thinks of it.
Oh, my
but
God.
But I think it's funny that they got Corey Stoll to play Buzz Aldrin and just be a dick the entire time.
Yeah, any scene that Buzz Aldrin is talking, it's everyone's just being like, dude, shut the fuck up, which is hilarious. Oh, man, I like it. I think everyone is good. Claire Foy is good. Like, the way...
Thankfully, his kids have like almost no dialogue lines, so they can't fuck it up.
Right. Well, you know, it's kind of funny because this movie is filmed in a very similar way to A Star Is Born. It's a lot of close-ups. And I think what Chazelle really kind of shines in, he does the big things well, so well, that we kind of forget that he does the little things well, too. Like the interactions between the families and, you know, even Neil and his children, Neil and his wife, they're all... have these moments of humanity that you don't really like. There's not too much reason to put him in there, but he's just like, this is who this guy was, and it comes off so natural and so sincere. It's really endearing to watch.
And I think those scenes juxtapose super well with like the cinematic turbulence of like the rocket launches and the trips to space.
His life was as rocky as the space program. Whoa! Yeah.
His life was just a tin can strapped to a fucking rocket jet.
Oh, man. Let's get into advertising. Oh, wait.
Oh, we're here.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So my final thoughts on this movie are, it's so well put together and so much of it works well that, you know, go see it. Go see the movie. You're not going to be disappointed. It's not going to be like the melodrama of A Star Is Born, but I enjoyed this more. It had me, you know, really gripping my seat and really had me filled with emotion through a lot of it. It is an evocative movie in a similar way to A Star Is Born. I don't know why I keep comparing it to it, but
because it's the only other real Oscar contender, I think, of the year.
Yeah. Go see this movie. Everything about it is really good.
Mm.
Period.
I completely agree. I think that if you want to celebrate the last real era of American exceptionalism, go see this movie.
Yeah, and then go watch The Social Network.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the second tier of American exceptionalism got us Facebook, man.
Now we have the most global influence in the world. Not that we didn't have it before.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for me, film knocks it out of the park. Go see it, of course. Like, it's great. And even as a flick, I think there's enough for everybody there. There's enough of the science and, you know, space and planes for the, you know, mechanical nerds out there. And also enough heartfelt story to really keep everybody else in there. Like, it's a great drama. It's a great... just a very well put together movie, and a movie that takes itself pretty seriously and kind of makes you do it too, because the way from the first scene,
onward, it really grabs you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I feel like this movie was kind of something I think that we really needed, because Neil Armstrong at this point has basically become an American myth.
Yeah.
And it's so refreshing to see such a humanized approach to his story and just the story of the space program in general, because this was some dangerous shit. Like, this was
definitely
legitimately unknown, final frontier. We're going to shoot ourselves out of our planet on a tin can type shit. And you don't really understand how terrifying it was just by going to like the museums and all the sanitized versions of the space program that we usually see today. And I think this movie kind of brings it back to being like, yeah, we didn't know what we were doing, but we were going to do it anyway.
Yeah, we choose to go to the moon, not because it is easy, but because it is hard.
Exactly, JFK.
Yeah. I mean, that's all I got. Go see both these movies. It was a good weekend for movies.
I will say, if you want to make your own cinematic universe, I would say watch The Right Stuff, then watch Hidden Figures, then watch First Man. Just like watch three of those movies in a night.
And then watch Apollo 13, and then watch The Martian.
Apollo 13, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
and then Star Trek if you're feeling edgy.
Right, yeah, and then go real weird. Definitely. All right. I think, yeah, it's a nice little double feature episode. We're going to keep it nice and breezy for y'all.
Yeah, we know you don't care about the content.
Nobody cares about movies but us.
The box office numbers, they're the same as they were last weekend. Venom is still making more money than it deserves.
Yeah. Halloween is, I'm seeing Halloween tonight.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
I'm jealous. I'm into it. I guess I got to go see it tomorrow.
It's on track to make like 70 million, so it'll knock everything down. So
maybe I'll just go see it tonight. I'm already drunk, but maybe I'll just Uber to the Draft House because I'm so hyped for this movie.
Do it, baby.
And like, man, you are the only reason I'm hyped for this movie, because I really didn't care too much about this. And then I started talking to you about how excited you were for this movie. So
yeah. Yes, I'm so ready. That's what we're going to review next week. Duh.
Duh.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is great, everybody. I'm so happy we could all get together. I really appreciate y'all listening to me and Robert. And, you know, I'm Dan Leo. And you can follow me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show. You can follow the podcast on @ViewingAngles and follow us on Letterboxd. I'm not on Letterboxd. D Leo is my username. Go to the website, viewingangles.com. Robert, what about you?
Follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd and Instagram at Robert Jr. JR.
Alrighty. Well, it's been fun, guys. And until next time.
Bye. Bye.